if we don't see a body, they're probably not dead.
Hi, I'm Malachi, and you're listening to the Judge a Book podcast. Downloads and reviews help us out a ton, so leave us 5 stars before you go. Every single week, join in for our book club where we talk about the books that we love, or maybe not so loved. New books will be chosen every month, and you'll get to listen to exactly how we judge a book. Hello, and welcome back to the Judge a Book podcast. We are talking about week 3 of Furyborn this week, which is all the way up to chapter 40. If you haven't read that, stop listening. We're gonna spill the tea on what has happened this week. This week's episode of the Judge a Book podcast was brought to you in part by Wax Center. Wax Center is giving all of you guys your very first wax with them for free. Just use the link in my podcast description, follow that, and make your appointment, and your very first wax will be on them. I'm back with Cameron. Hi, Cameron.
Hello.
And to say we're excited to discuss this week's section, I think is a massive understatement because we have been messaging each other like crazy while reading this. I think we might have finished it the next day or so after we recorded last time. So, yeah. We finished it. It feels like forever ago. I'm like dying to read the last part. So I'm so happy we're recording. And we have a lot to talk about. Starting strong right at chapter 1. Cameron said she was running around her house in circles. I was like screaming, freaking out. Like, yeah. So
we have so much to talk about. And I was reading the chapter as I was cooking pasta, and I stopped and read the chapter like header, the like proverb, if you will, and I read it, I put the book down, and then I ran around my kitchen because I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it was so funny. Last week we both had pasta, like right after we recorded this. I was eating and Cameron texted me, oh my gosh, it's already crazy from the chapter header, like, and I was like, oh my gosh, really? And then you were texting me freaking out, like, you have to read Riel's chapter tonight. And so yeah, we're getting into it because Riel's first chapter was insane, but I don't know, Eliana's chapters might have even been a little crazier this week. So, good stuff. Okay, I'm going to do it the same way that I did last week. I'm going to start with Riel and end on Eliana because Riel starts on the freaking high note and Eliana ends on an insane note. So I think it's going to turn out just great. Okay, so starting off with Riel. She has finished her medal trial as we start this chapter. It's 2 days after that. And she's talking with Corian, of course, in her mind. And Corian reveals himself to her in, like, a physical form, I guess you could say. It was mental, but, like, how he would physically appear in kind of a human-esque form. I don't even know how to explain it, but you guys read it, you know. And here's where it gets crazy, so let's just go ahead. I'm reading this. Cameron says, don't read chapter one. Like, read this first before you read chapter one. And she sends me the description of the Emperor that Eliana had described the Emperor as in her last chapter, I think, of our reading last week. She sends me that, I read that, and then we go to Riel's chapter. She's describing Corian, and it's the same description. Oh my gosh, this is where I was freaking out. I was laying in bed, but I did not stay in bed. I wanted to tell my husband so bad what was happening because I just needed to talk to somebody about it, but I want him to read these, so I couldn't tell him. So me and Cameron were like texting and voice messaging, and oh my gosh, my mind was freaking blown.
Yes.
Oh, that was insane. So I feel like, right, we can confirm that Corian is the Emperor, which you freaking predicted last week.
I know, that's why I was so excited. I was like, you have to read. I was right.
I messaged her and said, you had to read ahead, which I was totally joking, but, like, she hit the nail on the head. Like, she nailed it. Corian's the freaking Emperor, and that's just mind-boggling. Anyway, that's just big, right off the bat, we got thrown into that, and that was insane and a huge revelation. After that, Corian also confirms that he's an angel, and Riella's freaked out about this because she believes that all of the angels are gone. They're in the deep. The saints have sent them into the deep, and she believes them to not be there, but obviously Corian is there, so she just, like, is in denial, I think, at first. Like, she's like, there's no way he's an angel. Angels don't exist. Like, can't be true. But, it is. So she finds out that he's an angel. I think she goes to sleep. She has a nightmare. She wakes up and Evelyn, or however you say her guard's name, says, like, comes in, checks on her. She says, like, she thinks that she's, like, hearing things, or she's just off. She's not feeling well, and says that she wants to go on a walk in the gardens, and asks her guard to just kind of leave her be and let her go do her own thing. And guess who else is out there?
Dun, dun, dun.
Goo Goo Eyes Audric. Audric's out there, and things get a little frisky.
Yes.
Yeah, they definitely get frisky out in the garden. So we're confirmed that they, like, have the mutual feelings or whatever. He says, like, no, I don't love Ludovine. She's my cousin. Like, don't love her like that. And that he has feelings for her. They get frisky, and freaking Lord Dervin shows up, catches them in the act, kissing on the gardens and all this. So, that puts an end to that. We kind of cut scenes there. The next scene that we see is Ludovine wanting to meet Riel and take her on a walk of the gardens, and Riel's like, no, I don't want to go, I don't want to go, please. And Ludovine insists that she goes, and they're walking all through the gardens. Ludovine's saying hi to everyone, and what Ludovine really is doing is trying to put an end to the gossip and kind of put, like, a strong front up and say, like, look, I am okay with Riel still, so you guys need to chill on it. So she's making sure that lots of people see them together to kind of chill that out, which, like, way to go, freaking Ludovine. Like, she's a star. I would not be that cool.
She's a great friend.
Yeah, she is, 100%. Then she takes Riel to the, like, healer, which is kind of Audric's secret healer. He likes this guy better than the actual
appointed healer.
Yeah, like the royal one, whatever the king's preferred choice. And we meet them, and fun fact, we've already met them before. It's Garver and Simon, which we saw in the prologue. And as we know, Simon, or at least we think, Simon is the same Simon we know in Eliana's chapters, who is the wolf, who is the little boy who took the baby and time traveled and all of that crazy stuff. So it was so cute to see Simon as a little kid. I loved it. We get reintroduced to them and find out how Riel meets them and all of that jazz. Next, next, Riel has her shadow trial, and she, in this trial, she decides to control two elements at once. A little bit of a show off, but I love the scene after this. She's doing the shadow trial. She decides to use two elements, and I think the other element she's using is light or sun, if I'm correct. Yeah. And she uses the two elements. She just about, like, passes out, and then there's, like, some weird little scene where Corian comes in and kisses her and brings her back, and yeah, you know, her and Corian, just stick with Audric.
That was, when Riel talks to Corian, we get this little scene where he, like, touches her. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's not really there, but she can feel it, and then she daydreams about kissing him.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is going on?
And he's like, nothing, like, I don't even remember what word they use, like, I don't know. He's like, I won't do anything, like, too frisky. Yeah. But, I'm like, why do you even have to say that? Why is this a thought in the minds here? Like,
I think it's just solidifying my case.
Yeah, I know. But, like, you're possessed, honey. Like, why are you daydreaming about your demons? Like, you've got some issues. So, there's that scene at the start where Corian's, like, talking about gonna touch her and is all promiscuous. And then in the shadow trial, he, like, kisses her. So she, like, gets the energy burst to keep fighting in this trial. She controls both elements. And then kind of at the end of this trial, she decides to, like, threaten the Archon, however you say that.
Mm-hmm.
And she creates this dragon out of shadow, I guess, and has it, like, right up in his face. Like, and she's in this, like, internal battle with her and Corian and herself about, like, whether she's gonna, like, kill him with the shadows. And Corian's telling her to do it, and she decides against it because she's trying to be the Sun Queen right now, which to me is another... That's not a very good mark for her on the Sun Queen side, but obviously Corian's having some effect on her.
Right.
She ends up, like, retreating it and doesn't do anything to him, but definitely scares him. So, because of that, she has to have a little meeting with the king and the council again. And the Archon's, like, kind of being sassy in this part. Not really sassy, but he's very unhappy with her and is, like, trying to, like, argue with her about it. And so is Lord Durvin. And I just love the banter in this scene. It's freaking hilarious to me. And I definitely tabbed a lot of it because Lord Durvin's, like, trying to talk. And then the king's like, you can talk when I tell you to talk. And I freaking loved that.
Yeah, and there's... Sit down.
Yeah. There was just a whole big banter scene. But they're discussing with her about what her intentions were with that. And in this meeting, the king gets a message. And the message says that there have been 3 attacks on border towns, I guess. And Audric's really concerned about this. He says, like we've been getting signs that something like this was gonna happen. And in every single one of those, 2 people were left alive, which I'm like, that has to mean something. And Audric agrees, but the king's like, nah, it was just a coincidence. I'm like, really? Like, really 2 were left in every one of those? Yeah, that meeting kind of ends because of that. They kind of dismiss for the time being, but they do reconvene again. And we also get a little peek that there have been 34 translations to the prophecy, which you were mentioning, I think, week 1, about how maybe they're reading the prophecy wrong. And I'm like, they don't even have to be reading it wrong if there's 34 of them to choose from. Yeah, we get to see that there's a million translations of this. So that's freaking crazy.
I mean, I think in week 1 I said, you know, maybe they read it wrong and I didn't know, like, what that meant. But now I'm kind of thinking, like, maybe the Blood Queen, Sun Queen could be the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, how they grow in their lifespan.
Another thing about the prophecy, and I think the prophecy mentions the gate, or, like, some translations mention the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And then Corian mentions that the gate's open, and that's, like, or that all gates fall, or something like that. Yeah, the gate couldn't stand forever. So I'm like, is the gate already open? Like, what point in the prophecy are we right now? I don't freaking know.
I feel like, and this is getting a little ahead of ourselves, but... because they say, like, oh, one will bring the fall and one will, like, save them.
Mm-hmm.
I think Corian's gonna use Riel to cause the wall or the gate or whatever to fall.
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, manipulating her.
Yeah, I don't know. This section's deep this week. There's, like, so many theories and, like, possibilities. It's insane. That kind of evening, I think, after this scene, Ludovine and Audric and Riel are all together. And, like, they're in this, like, halfway awkward situation because I don't think they've all been together since Riel and Audric were in the garden. And they're, like, I think Audric's saying, like, let's not talk about it. Riel's like, we've got to talk about it or we're never going to get past it. And that's when Ludovine really opens up and, like, pretty much says, like, I'll help you guys be together. I think that she pretty much doesn't even care to be the queen and is willing to, like, leave that behind, but they know that that's not really gonna fly with everybody else, so they're talking about, like, getting away with an affair and keeping it secret. Yeah. And all that's getting thrown around, but Ludovine doesn't really care, so, you know.
Yeah, she's like, I don't want to love my cousin, sorry.
Yeah, and my question is, like, I don't know if they followed along with that and did, like, the affair situation. Like, when they go to have kids, like, what's gonna happen? But, you know, who knows? When the kingdom wants some heirs to the throne, I think there's gonna be some issues. That night, Riel has a dream, and this dream has a lot to unpack, too. She dreams of a throne that's illuminated, and, like, as she is sitting on it, I believe, she notices that it's made of bones, and Corian's there, and he says this is where he's been. I think he means, like, this is, like, the deep, like, this is where he's from, but mm-hmm. Again, it's just kind of a weird little scene, a weird little dream.
Open to interpretation.
Yes. Yeah. that makes Riel wake up a little hot and heavy. I don't really know how the blood throne makes that happen. Or, I mean, the bone throne makes that happen. But she wakes up distracted. And after she's not distracted anymore, she realizes that her guard is, like, knocked out on the floor. And there's other people in the room with her. Awkward. She wakes up. She gets hit in the back of the head. I think that she gets drugged.
Mm-hmm.
They put like a cover over her head and take her, and she's recognizing the voices that are talking. And what happens is they take her and throw her off a cliff. Insane. She is like asking the Imperium to save her. And after she gets done praying that, a Chevelle, I think is how I'm going to say it. A Chevelle, which is like a winged horse, sweeps in and saves her. Freaking epic. And she lives. They go spend the night. She's like, she falls asleep with the horse away from her home.
Yeah.
When she wakes up, she goes back to the castle palace, and there's a search party going on for her because she's missing.
And her dad's like freaking out.
Her dad is freaking out.
Which obviously we've discussed in previous weeks that he's not very kind or loving towards her. There's obviously some resentment he's harboring for the death of her mother
mm-hmm.
and his wife. But in this scene, he's like, where is my daughter? Like,
yeah, and there's Riel? Actually two scenes this week where he shows some emotion. Yeah, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. So he has a search party going on for her, and guess who's freaking there? Lord Dervin. And she knows it's Lord Dervin because she recognized his voice. She uses the Force. Just kidding. She.
You're not wrong.
I mean, we've seen Force choking before. She uses the wind and, like, chokes him. And Ludivine's freaking out because her dad's getting choked. And Riel says, tell Ludivine what happened or I'm gonna kill you. And he tells Ludivine that he pushed her off the cliff. He tried to kill Riel. But Riel is very tempted, again, I think by the assist of Corian, to just go ahead and completely kill him. But Audric cuts in, says, don't. Like, it'll be taken care of. Don't kill him. It's gonna be bad for your image. So she does end up releasing him. That happens. Freaking what the heck, Lord Dervin. We get another court scene with the king and his court, and they kind of discuss what's gonna happen with Lord Dervin. He has been sent back to his city country, and he's on house arrest for the rest of his life. Ludivine, Audric, and Riel kind of have a little powwow. Ludivine's like extremely upset about everything. She kind of has like a little bit of a breakdown and is crying. Riel's like comforting her, and then Audric comes in, and Riel just wants them to have like a little sleepover together like they did when they were kids. Audric doesn't really think that's a good idea after all of the little scandal that's been going on, but I think they end up having the little sleepover anyway. Oh, also during the sleepover and all of this, the Chevelle has stayed with Riel. I think it even like stayed in her room and stuff, and
yeah.
Her guard was like, is it gonna stay here forever? Or what's the situation? So we've got a little powwow going on in Riel's room.
It was also believed to be a myth that, or like an extinct animal. That they didn't
exist, huh? Yeah. I loved it.
The thing that she used to sneak, so when she used to sneak into the queen's like parlor room where she got caught with her in last week's episode,
mm-hmm.
she went in there to look at that beast specifically on the ceiling, because that was painted on there.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know if it's Saint or who, but like, I think it's Catel.
Mm-hmm.
There's someone in history who it's like their favorite, and like they're known for having the Chevelle. So I'm wondering how or if that's gonna get tied together. Yeah. But yeah, so we have a magical creature now, which I'm super excited about. And apparently there's other ones that are not there. So God's Beast, I think, is what they're called.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully maybe we get some more of those. The next day, she decides to go back to the medic Garver to go get like her burns treated from this trial, I believe. Leaves her burns. She goes out, Barver's like healing her or whatever, and Simon is outside petting her Chevelle, which is named Etheria. It just gets commented on that only Riel, Audric, and now Simon have been able to pet her horse, and so I feel like that's the start of some trust with Simon that we'll probably get to see again, that we saw a little bit in the prologue. So yeah, that's all of Riel this week.
Well, it's weird because Simon in the prologue hates her. Mm-hmm. He's like, I can't, like, he's mad that they're even there and that her dad's even there to help her in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, how do we go from this sweet little boy who looks up to her, who's in awe of her, who is, like, so trustworthy that her God's Beast is allowing Simon to get close, to where we're at in the prologue where Simon's, like, 8 years old and, like, has come to hate Riel with, like, a fiery burning passion.
Yeah, I don't know. I obviously, if I was 8 years old and there was some crazy lady, like, talking to an angel in her head, I would probably hate her too. And but I don't know. There's definitely so much to come to fruition in, like, the 2 year period that we're missing still. So, ugh. Yeah, there's a lot.
Yes, there is.
Okay, in Eliana's chapter.
Oh, Eliana.
We've got some interesting revelations this week. So, for Eliana, we start off with her waking up. They're going to Rinthos, which is the town where Hob has, like, a connection where they hope to, like, Hob and Patrick hope to connect so that the refugees that survived have a place to go, I believe. And fun fact, I didn't really explain last week's header, so I'm gonna take the opportunity now. So, at the beginning of last week's episode, I put a bunch of clips of me saying the Hob, because last week when we were recording, I kept referring to Hob as the Hob, and I could not figure out why I was doing that, so I looked it up, and it's the freaking black market in the Hunger Games, like... Yeah, District 13's little market that they have, the Hob, and I guess that's stuck in my brain from preteen Malachi reading those books, so that's why I said that, and yeah, I just found that hilarious. Why am I referring to a human as the? But there you have it. So they go to Rinthos, they meet a woman named Camille, who is, like, I guess kind of the equivalent of Patrick and Hob, of this sanctuary, where they meet Camille, who is, like, the head of this sanctuary in Rinthos. Camille pretty much tells them, like, you guys go take a bath, like, yada yada, which I always appreciate in fantasy books, because I feel like in a lot of books they don't ever bathe. So, they go to just shower, and Eliana has the revelation that Navi's gonna find out that she doesn't have the burns on her back anymore and that she's healed.
Mm-hmm.
And we get the little scene where Eliana tells Remy that she has this healing power. They've hid it from their mom, which I'm like, how could you have hid it from your mom your whole life? I feel like moms know more than kids, like, think they do. So I feel like the mom might know, but, you know,
yeah.
Like, if she's had this since she was born, when she was, like, a baby, if she was a toddler and fell down and scraped her knees, she would heal. So the mom has to know, I would think.
Yeah, I would agree.
She ends up telling Navi because, I mean, it's just gonna come out anyway. She tells Navi not to tell anybody. And then they get into discussion about how this could be happening and why it could be happening. And Remy's there too. They're having this whole discussion and Eliana brings up that she's worried that she might be like the...
Adatrox?
Yes, like the Adatrox and Lord Morbray and Lord Arcleon and all of that. And she gets to express these worries to Navi because Navi's familiar with these people. Remy brings up that maybe these people are angels, and then in the next chapter we kind of discuss more about maybe Eliana might be a mark, which would mean that she's half angel, half human. But what?
Which, that's my theory, because I think Riel's her mom and Corian's her dad.
Yes, that is Cameron's theory. But Remy does bring up that marks have marks on their back where their wings should be. So that's a little bit of a plot hole, but maybe the healing healed those scars where the wings were supposed to be. I don't know. We don't have all the answers. So maybe Eliana's a mark. We don't really know. The conversation kind of gets interrupted because Simon comes and he's knocking on the door. We get a little bit of a little tiny bit of a romance-ish scene here where he's like, Eliana's like, were you wanting to catch me naked? Which he's already seen her naked. He kept her naked when they freaking healed her back before. But he's like, no, I was hoping for more than a peek. And so we get a little banter scene there. He's just in a towel and she's like noticing all of his scars and all of this. So a little something might be happening there. And also at the end of that chapter, while she's like admiring Simon, I guess, she has this feeling of home, like a sense of home around him all of a sudden. And we think we know, right? That he brought her from Soldaria and
Maybe that's why. So, interesting little tidbit gets thrown in there.
There's so many theories.
There's so many theories. So many. Aliona has a bad dream. She wakes up from a nightmare. She decides to go to Navi's room to get some comfort there. They have, like, a little discussion. I think she falls asleep in Navi's room. She wakes up in the middle of the night or maybe early morning. And in the hallway area, she runs into Camille. And Camille tells her that she has a job for her, that there are missing girls, which we already know about, and they're disappearing from the sanctuary, and we find out that I think Camille knows or suspects that it's Fidelia. So we find out about that group of people, that I don't know what
cult. They're
called. Yeah, that cult, gang, whatever they are. She tells her, like, the girls are going missing. There's, like, a bar kind of thing that they go missing from late at night. So, Eliana's gonna go stake out there, watch for any girls going missing, try and catch the people, because she thinks, or at least hopes, that she'll be able to find her mom through this effort. So, she goes, she, like, stakes out at the bar, she's checking people out, a girl goes missing, like, right in front of her.
Go missing.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one that's, like, sitting at the bar with a guy, which I think might be the first one that she notices, but that's not the only person that goes missing. Like you said, the three go missing. And so, she's, like, up, like, looking around, trying to figure out what's going on when Simon and Navi both show up. And then pretty soon after Simon and Navi show up, Rosenthal shows up. And like I said, if we don't see a body, they're probably not dead.
Yep.
He wasn't dead. But apparently we now know, even if you see a body, they're probably not dead, because everybody comes back to life in this book. So Rosenthal's there. He's like ready to kill her, kidnap her, whatever. I think his goal is actually to kidnap her, but Elena doesn't know that because of a little chapter header that I saw. They get into their fight. Simon and Navi are there. Simon and Navi are like screaming at her to run and go and like take off because they are gonna get her, which tells me, it makes me think that they know more of what's going on than we know and more than Eliana knows. She's like kind of attempting to run and Navi is behind her. Navi gets knocked in the head, I believe. And then essentially Eliana gets like chloroformed. Yeah. They like put something up to her mouth. She passes out and she wakes up in a cell. And here's where it gets crazy. Not like it hasn't been crazy up until now, but this is where it like seriously gets crazy.
Yeah.
There's literally, I've said this 10 times this episode, there's a lot to unpack here. She wakes up in the cell. She's like initially freaking out. She thinks that she hears Navi screaming. She then realizes that maybe her mom's here. She's screaming for her mom. She's like having a major freak out sesh. Then a wraith appears. And her name is Zara. We get a ton of backstory, or as we like to think, presumed backstory, because there has to be some plot twists in here. The first little bit that we kind of see is that Zara is referring to her as queen and my queen and the queen and all of this. And Eliana's like, I'm not the queen. And the end of that chapter is like this whole giant paragraph of all the things that she is. She's the sun queen. She's the son of the Lightbringer. She's the Furyborn child. She's, you know, Riel's daughter. She's like all of these things. And that's what Zara is like. She's going on this tangent about all of the things that Eliana is. And obviously Eliana's like, huh? Like, she's just surprised. And the next chapter, Eliana's like, says something about like, can you help me find my mom? Zara says your mom's not here. Or she says, who you think is your mom is not here. But Rosin's not really your mom. And I'm like, I freaking knew it. Or at least I think I knew it. You're actually the daughter of the Lightbringer. You're Riel's daughter. And then she says like, Zara says, I'm gonna get you out of here. We have to wait for like a shift change or something like that. But I'm gonna take you home. I mean, and Eliana's like thinking they're gonna go to Orline. But Zara really means Sildaria, because she says she was born in Sildaria. And Eliana's kind of like making fun of her. She's like, oh yeah, I was born in Sildaria, yada yada. But
yeah, she thinks she's like an apparition or like a hallucination.
Yeah, she's like
won't buy into it.
Yeah. She thinks she's going crazy. They're about to leave at the very end of this chapter. Like, they're about ready to leave. And we're presumed to believe that Eliana is the Sun Queen. And that's where we freaking end. Mic drop. So, what did you think?
So, obviously, when we started out strong and I was like, my theories are proved. Corian's the Emperor. the Emperor recognized Eliana when she had that little, like, mind teleportation thing with Lord Morbray. He recognized her because she's his daughter. Like, this whole theory I have, right? And then we get to this chapter, and she's like, you're the son of the Lightbringer. And I was like, oh, bubble deflated. But the more I think about it, the more I'm so sure that Corian's the father. And that they just don't know. Like, Riel never disclosed to anyone, including Audric, if Audric was even alive. Because in the beginning, we find out he's dead. So we don't even know if he knows the baby's coming. That it's Audric's son. So everyone grows up thinking the Sun Queen or Eliana is the Lightbringer's daughter. But I don't think so.
Yeah, they also refer to Audric as king in this little section too. So he has to become a king too within this 2-year span and die and all that. So I wonder how the royalty works. If the current king, King Bastian, has to die for Audric to become the king, or if it's like when you get married, or how it's gonna work. But
yeah, I don't know.
Something's about to go down. This week's reading was intense. It was good. Like, if I liked this book. If I liked this book before, I'm freaking obsessed now. Like, I seriously can't stop thinking about it. I 100% am going to read the next 2 books, like, immediately. I can't help it. I'm super enjoying it. The twists and turns and the, like, subtle connections between the two. Like, it has just been so far a great experience for me reading. I also love that even though that Ludivine and Audric are cousins, unlike Cassandra Clare, we have a distaste between the cousins. So that helps me out a bit there too. Let's go ahead and talk about any like key moments, any tabs, anything like that that we have, because that's like my favorite part.
Okay.
So, so when I was reading this week, Cameron got me so freaking psyched that I just started reading. I didn't have my tabs. I didn't have a notepad. I didn't have anything. And then I got freaking sucked into the story. So, I didn't tab as much this week as I was going along, but I went back through and tabbed. But, guys, I hope you guys are enjoying this book as much as we are.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, let's see here. You have a tab on page 1 of this week's reading, so.
I did. I had a tab for the, like, opening little tidbit before the chapter begins, because it confirms that angels have an infinite road of a life and ageless minds, so they're definitely immortal. And I was like, dun-dun-dun! This is before we knew Corian's descriptors matched up, but I was like, yeah. Corian's definitely the Emperor.
Yep. I wonder with Corian, you know, like, obviously Marks can time travel, right? And they're only half angel. So full angels should be able to easily time travel. I'm curious if Corian is set in one time zone, or if he is simultaneously like the Emperor and in Riel's mind, like within the realm of time, like how his timeline progression has worked, whether he lived the full time period or if he jumped in the future, like maybe Simon and Eliana did. Like, I'm very curious as to what his path has been in this in-between period.
I've got no guesses for you.
I mean we could guess, but we could guess all night long.
Yeah,
that's the great thing about this book so far. I think we're gonna be shocked, and I think we're left to some easy plot twists, because I feel like it can go a lot of directions. So, you know, what you think might happen may not happen. I'm intrigued. All right, we kind of already talked about the little frisky scene between Corian and Riel. I definitely tabbed that.
Me too.
Oh, one little quote. This is just a fun little quote that I loved. Riel, like, wakes up from this, like, nightmare or whatever before she goes on her walk, and Evelyn, guard, whoever, comes in and was like, can I get you a cinnamon cake? And she's like, how about 3? And she's like, 3 cakes are generally speaking much more effective, my lady. And I just love that. It reminds me of, like, the, like, quote, like, let them eat cake. I don't know. It's just funny. We end that one chapter. She's like, I would love to see Corian standing there with an apology and a sly kiss for me.
I know. I was like, excuse me?
I'm like, did she actually really want Audric that badly in the garden? Or was she just like hot and heavy from Corian? I don't know.
No, she wants Audric.
Yeah, I think there's another part that I tabbed in here. Corian mentions that Audric has the eyes of a cow, something like unintelligent and unattractive or something like that. And she like snaps at Corian and says, well, you have the tongue of a serpent or something like that. I just wonder, like, how much of that is Corian being malicious, or is he being jealous? How much is he going to get in her mind about her opinion of other people? How big of a wedge is he going to drive in her relationships between others? So, obviously,
oh, I'm fully convinced he's the one that gets her to kill him.
Yeah, no.
At the beginning of Eliana's first chapter, I have tabbed the little tidbit before the chapter begins.
Mm-hmm.
And this is it says it's the foreword to a collection of Antaran children's tales entitled Stories of a Forgotten Age. And it has to do with the prophecy. Mm-hmm. It says it is widely believed that the creation of the Gate, capital G, which ended the Angelic Wars, began the end of magic as it once was. If the Gate was the beginning of the end, then the fall of the Blood Queen was the true ending. With her death, the Blood Queen stamped out every remaining spark of ancient power, leaving the world ravaged and dim. So that kind of answers, first of all, what the heck was going on when Riel's like exploded in the prologue, as well as why they don't really talk about magic in Eliana's chapters.
And why no one else has magic.
Yeah, Riel took it. She I don't know what she did with the Imperium, but she did something.
She's in touch with the Imperium, that's for sure.
Yeah, and then on the next page, this is Remy. She's like, oh, magic doesn't exist. And he says, but it did once. Maybe some of it survived Queen Riel's fall. And if she's Queen Riel's daughter.
Yeah. And maybe, like, obviously, to me, anyone that already had magic, they probably, you would think they would still have magic, but then what would she have sucked out of the world? Like, non-existent magic? But maybe if it's already inside the people.
Do you think that's maybe why Simon, when he was time traveling, had that, like, because there was the thread that he was trying to follow to Borzval, and then something went really wrong, and, like, Eliana was, like, pulled from his arms? Is it because the magic literally was, like, being sucked from the world?
Maybe. That would make sense.
Yeah.
Why,
I also tabbed this, yeah.
I also think it's funny that she called her mama.
The word.
Yep.
That's why I have this tabbed. I was reading it and I was like, oh, that's why I tabbed this.
Yeah, it's freaking hilarious. Like, when you find out that's your mom.
Little did you know.
Yeah. A few pages after that of the tab that you tabbed, we see Simon talking to some guards, and I think it's at the sanctuary. I could be wrong of where they are right this minute, but he's talking to some guards and he speaks to them in a language that Eliana doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And Remy recognizes it as Old Sildarian, which is the language of the Blood Queen and of the Lightbringer. Not a surprise to me still. It just further confirms that Simon is the same Simon from then. And that's why he would know that language, because he grew up speaking it. That would have been his first language. But it's odd to me that they've changed languages in this time as well.
Yeah, that is.
It's not even like Old English where they would be speaking thy and thee, because she doesn't know it. And that means the guards understood the language too. I don't know. Like, he has to be speaking it to someone that knows it, so why do they know it? Why do they know Old Sildarian? Right. Yeah, odd.
Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun.
So I also tabbed, and we already discussed this a little bit, so I'll be very brief, on the end of one of Eliana's chapters. It was a strange thing that had so unbalanced her beyond her lonely body's reaction to his own. A sensation that sometimes came upon her when Simon was near, and one she couldn't explain, a sense of the familiar, like she had felt when standing on the terrace overlooking Sildaria during her vision of the Emperor, an irrational sense of belonging and rightness, a sense, she thought, dazed and faintly irritated, of home. Which just makes me believe that Corian's really her dad. Watch me be,
I don't know,
so,
but she's looking over
wrong.
Sildaria, so, like, Sildaria is her home, right? So, of course, she should have the feeling of home there, but please, please don't let Corian be her dad. I'm sure he probably is. Like, I mean,
watch me be wildly wrong.
But he probably is. I just am wishful thinking. I don't like the bad people to win. I don't want Corian to win and have Eliana and all that stuff. But maybe it explains why she's evil. But she's not exactly evil. She's just, I don't know.
Why Garver in the prologue was like, oh my god, he's coming. Because she didn't from my understanding of that chapter, that pre-chapter, is that Riel didn't want Corian to know about the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And why wouldn't he want her to know? Because it's their daughter, and she's going to be the Sun Queen, and it's going to be the downbringing of the angels again. So when he sees her in the future, he realizes, like, oh my god, it's you. And Simon freaks out and makes sure that that she didn't tell the Emperor where she was, because if he gets her, he's going to stop her from saving the world.
Yes. And then I also, maybe it's in the like vision that Zara gives Eliana at the end of this. I think when Eliana is seeing the scene where Riel's like over the body and all of that, I think that Riel kisses Corian.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Which is weird, right? Like, she's like so not wanting him near and not wanting anything to do with him. And if he didn't know about the baby, like trying to keep it a secret, then they wouldn't have been kissing recently, because she would have been pregnant and he would have known that she was pregnant. They've gone a period of time where they're not connected in the mind, but then immediately are kissing again after. It's confusing to me.
Yeah.
Or maybe, I don't know, maybe if you're right about Corian being the dad, maybe Riel tried to play it off that it's Audric's baby, and if he sees Eliana, he'll know it's not Audric's baby because she looks like a mark or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe maybe there's that. I didn't reread the prologue this week like I said I was going to, but
I didn't either.
I feel like Simon didn't think Riel knew that he was a mark, though, or knew of them being marks.
It's a secret. Like, they're, like, looked down upon.
Yeah, but you would think that he would recognize Eliana as a mark if my theory just now was correct. I don't know.
I mean, he might not have as a child, because he was literally, like, his dad was just murdered in front of him.
Yeah, and he's 8 years old.
Was handed this baby and told to time travel, and he's like, I literally have not practiced.
Mm-hmm.
But now he might, and he's so secret. Why would he want Eliana in the first place?
Yeah, and I want to know why he is so powerful. In the prologue, it's, like, talking about him as if he's, like, more powerful than other marks. Maybe he's not, and he just doesn't understand that's why he's so powerful, but it seemed like he's more powerful than others. Maybe other marks, but maybe it's just referring to other people.
Oh, okay, so I found the page. This whole passage was a little confusing. She was back on the firelit plain, watching a woman kneel beside a dismembered, blood-soaked corpse. The woman's back was to Eliana. She wore a suit of black armor and a crimson cloak. The woman moved pale hands over the corpse, knitting across skull and collarbone, down chest and across severed hips. The air around the corpse shimmered, shifting, and then the woman sat back, calm, and the corpse jerked, gasped, and staggered to his feet. He was no longer a corpse. His skin was whole and new, his limbs intact. He took a few unsteady steps before falling to his knees. He looked down at his body and threw out... Okay, so it's the corpse that comes back. Da-da-da-da. You're working faster now, said the man beside her, whom Eliana had not noticed before. Well done. He drew the woman into an embrace, and Eliana stood frozen in horror as their faces came into view. The woman was dark-haired and unspeakably beautiful, with a face so pale and faultless it could have been carved from porcelain. And then the Emperor, he guided the woman's mouth to his, and she clung to him as if their kiss was the only reason she remained standing. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Who was she bringing back to life?
I don't know, but Zara mentions that they were unsuccessful in the resurrection. So
I'm thinking that they killed Audric by accident.
But why would Corian want to help her bring Audric back?
Well, he probably was trying to prove to her, like, hey, you can bring them back. Here's my crazy, wacky thought.
Mm-hmm.
Corian's teaching her how to bring people back because, as Zara teaches us, the wraiths don't have bodies anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have, like, corporeal forms. Corian wants a body. Corian wants to be in this world. And so she convinces him to kill Audric and bring him back. So he would take over Audric's body.
Oh, okay. This is just a random theory, but I mean, it could be so wrong, right? Because we have a million of these. What if Corian takes over Audric's body and they go about like Audric is Corian? I mean, like, Corian is Audric, right? All is well. Mm-hmm. No one's worried about anything because it's Audric. And that's why she, like, maybe eventually ends up actually killing him. Maybe Corian uses Audric's body because that would make sense, right? There would be no question about trusting him, and he could move into a position of power because he's Audric. He never does anything wrong. So Corian could take over Audric's body.
And then she'd kill him to free Audric. She obviously would have to lose her true love in the process, but at least Corian couldn't manipulate the world. The question that is only left remaining is, how does Corian regain a full body in this world? Because clearly he does if he's the Emperor.
Oh, because he's the Emperor and he's in that other form.
Yeah. And he's in the form that he's showing her. So it's like his original body. body.
Okay, maybe that's just a crazy theory, but...
Oh, no, I'm on the same track. I'm like, there's something spooky's going on.
Yeah, like, whose body is this? And, but, what... I don't know, maybe it's, like, a super mangled corpse, but you would think Eliana would recognize Audric, except she's not, like, super well-versed if she didn't recognize Riel as being the...
Mm-hmm.
Blood Queen, but they talk about the Lightbringer all the freaking time. But that would also explain why they think Eliana is the Lightbringer's baby if Corian takes over Audric's body. He better leave Audric alone.
That begs a whole lot of genetic questions that I don't think this author probably even got into.
Yeah.
If someone's taking over someone else's body, whose genetics is the baby's?
Jumping to an Eliana chapter with a scene with Rosin, who we've now heard from Zara is not Eliana's real mom, but she says, "You've always loved this ugly old thing," talking about the necklace that Eliana always wears.
That's so funny. I have the same thing tabbed.
That's too funny. I love when we have the same thing. And it says, "Ever since the day that we found it." Huh?
I know.
How did y'all find that but not find the baby? Or are you just not telling her? Or what? Like, I have so many questions about where Eliana freaking came from. Or how Rosin thinks that she's her baby. Or maybe she just knows she's not. I don't know. I have a lot of questions.
Yeah,
but they found the necklace, so was the necklace, like, dropped, like, a little symbol to her, or is she just making that up, telling Eliana that she's had it since she was a baby?
Right.
I don't know.
If she said, like, oh, you've had this since you were a baby, Eliana could question, like, why did you give it to me? And she'd be like, well, we found it with you, and be like, oh, wait, just kidding, you're not my kid. So it makes sense that she would lie, but if she is telling the truth, I was wondering, like, where was it dropped, how could she have found it, but if she has this, like, really weird sense of, like, belonging and home when she's around Simon and when she sees Sildaria and potentially Corian or the Emperor, maybe she felt that same thing with the necklace, which is why she wouldn't ever let it go. I don't know. There's a lot of questions with the whole parent situation, with the whole non-genetic parent situation.
A million parent questions. Like, non-biological, biological, who's the baby daddy? What's going on? Yeah, there are too many questions about Eliana's birth that are yet to be answered and may not even be answered this book. At the start of chapter 34, I have that chapter heading tabbed because it ties Razaval to the Emperor, and they are in a current communication, which I didn't really realize was going on. It says, "Because of your generosity and teaching, my lord, it will take more than a fall from a tower to kill me. One more day and I will have them." So, yeah. Razaval, who is the head of Invictus, who Eliana was working for and was about to join, is in cahoots with the Emperor, who is Corian and all of that, which I found shocking. But it does tie everything together, so it makes sense.
I really want answers.
When she's fighting Razaval too, he says, "I'm like you, I can't be killed." So,
yeah.
Is that she?
Means people know.
Yes, that does mean people know, but obviously the Emperor would know. So the Emperor's talking to Razaval. The Emperor could tell Razaval, but she doesn't know that she's immortal. She just thinks she heals quickly. But from what he's saying, it makes it sound like she can't die. So,
I mean, let's not test that theory.
let's just dissect that quote, I guess.
"I am Zara," the woman said, "and I am a wraith, and you are Eliana Ferrocora, the dread of Orlean, the last house of Corvery, daughter of the Lightbringer, heir to the throne of Saint Catel, the true queen of Sildaria." And Zara spread her long arms wide. Her dark smile was full of joy. "You are the one who rises, fury born child. You are the Sun Queen, Eliana, and I have come to bring you home."
Okay, so Catel or Catel, whatever, is the one that likes Chevelles, the horses.
Yeah.
And also, what does Furyborn mean? What is a Furyborn child?
The Furyborn child. Also, "one who rises" is all capitals.
Like, it's almost like it's from the prophecy. The one who rises, you know? Because she speaks from the prophecy. I don't know.
Got me going to look up the prophecy now.
But there's 34 translations of the prophecy. Which one are you going to look at?
The one we were given.
Yeah. "Daughter of the Lightbringer, heir to the throne." She also refers to her as Eliana Ferrocora. Like, she still refers to her of the last last name of this, like, adoptive father, mm-hmm. essentially, which is odd to me when she's referring to her as a bunch of other things that she's not. We still have no answers about her father being part of the rebellion either.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions. Also, I want to know who this prophet is. The word of the prophet. The word of the prophet. We keep getting this.
I think Zara says that that's who she, like, worships or something.
Yeah, that's, like, who their leader is. And Simon is also the, like, they say, like, the wolf is, like, the prophet's, like, lackey, if you will. The gate will fall, the angels will return and bring ruin to the world. You will know this time by the rise of two human queens, one of blood and one of light. One with the power to save the world, one with the power to destroy it. Two queens will rise, they will carry the power of the seven. They will carry your fate in their hands, two queens will rise. It doesn't say anything about Furyborn children.
Uh-uh.
It's just the whole reason why I was looking it up. They will carry the power of the seven, though. So, if Eliana really is the Sun Queen, although Riel wiped the powers out, wouldn't you think she's also powerful?
Well, according to the prophecy, she should be able to control all seven elements, just like Riel can.
Yeah.
But she can't, or at least we haven't seen her be able to do that.
Oh. This book is crazy.
It's freaking crazy. Right now, who would you say is your least favorite character?
I am not feeling a lot of disdain for any character right now. I would have to say I think Eliana is just my least favorite, just because I'm consistently questioning her choices.
Mm-hmm.
But within this last chapter, I mean, her storyline's getting a little bit more interesting. So we'll see if that changes.
This addition to her storyline has definitely revived her character a lot, because mm-hmm. I was not interested in reading her chapters before, and now I am. So that is interesting. And we might get a combination next week of the timelines if she's taking Eliana back to Sildaria. I don't know. Doesn't say that she's going to take her back in time, but we might get some combination, maybe. I would say my least favorite characters right now, Lord Durvin. Like I said, if you mess with my girl Riel, I'm not your fan. I don't really like Lord Durvin. I don't love Eliana most of the time. And the Archon, I don't like him either because he's messing with Riel. So those are probably my least favorite characters, but again, I don't like hate anybody. Maybe Corian. But
true.
Yeah.
We forgot something huge in Riel's plot.
Oh, okay. What do we miss?
After the God's Beast comes to her and saves her, they take that as a sign that she's the Sun Queen. And they're like, you don't even have to do your last trials.
How did I miss that?
And she's like, no, I'm going to do them because I'm going to prove to you that I can master fire.
Yeah, well, she at least wants to do fire because she feels like she needs to, like, overcome it because of her dad. Oh my gosh, how did I miss that? How did we miss that? Yeah, that's fucking huge. They already, like, declared her as the Sun Queen, but she's, like, going back to prove it further. Yeah.
I don't know what made me think of that, but I was just like, oh, yeah.
Freaking huge, yeah. Big moment that we missed in the recap. Right now, they have declared her as the Sun Queen, and she's not willing to take it because she still harbors all of this from her mom's death, so she is going to overcome that, or try.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Oh, how do you think that the two timelines are tied together right now?
Right now? Well, I think Eliana, I know Eliana is obviously Riel's daughter,
mm-hmm.
and we think Simon is Simon from the past, yeah. And the Emperor is definitely Corian. Those are just things that tie the past to the future, but I don't really see how they could, because time is obviously not linear, I don't know how they could be coinciding at the same time. I don't know if we'll get to see any of the characters in Eliana's chapters travel back in time.
Yeah, I wonder if we're ever gonna really get Riel and Eliana together, or even maybe Audric, all together at the same time, because if Simon does still have his powers, which he may not, like you brought up, he could possibly be able to bring her back in time to where Riel is alive. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. I would like to see them together. I just don't know that that's actually gonna happen. I mean, Riel, like, never got to know her daughter. She just had this baby, and the baby was taken away from her. Well, she gave it away, but yeah.
But she was also loony pants.
She was loony pants, and doing something with somebody, and kissing Corian, and sucking the power from the world. So, does she die in the prologue?
We're led to believe that, yes.
Okay. So, I don't know. I don't know how they'll be tied together. Like I said, I'd like to see them all alive and together, but that's just my happy ending wishful thinking. The next question, which I feel like there's 1,000,005 answers for, is what decision has been made that you don't agree with, and what would you do differently? I think one of my number ones for Riel is she thinks to go tell
Tal and somebody that she has a freaking angel in her mind and then decides against it. And, like, she even has some scenes where, like, is thinking. They're thinking that she's crazy and she's like, you don't even know. I've got an angel inside my brain. And I'm like, why don't you tell somebody? Anyone. Audrey? Anybody? Ludivine? Tell somebody that you have an angel in your brain before you get completely possessed and have no control of yourself anymore.
I think she'll confide in Audric.
Yeah.
Eventually.
So, that is one of Riel's decisions that I don't agree with, which there's not a lot of Riel decisions that I have not agreed with so far, but that is definitely one of them.
Pretty much any decision Eliana's made to leave Simon has me thinking, like, what are you doing?
And like, every Remy, time she's where's Remy at right him? Now? Well, she's in this jail cell and about to go to Sildaria. Where is little Remy gonna go? Who's he gonna be with while his sister's gone, his mom's gone, his dad's dead? Like, what's going on with Remy?
We could assume that he's with Simon.
What just happened with Simon? Did he get knocked out?
No, he's, like, fighting off Rosabelle when she gets taken. The last scene we see is him fighting Rosabelle, but Rosabelle's the one that, like, knocks her out, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think, but I don't really know. It didn't actually say who comes up behind her and chloroforms her, but yeah, I think it's Rosabelle, because he had that interaction with the Emperor saying that he would have her soon and take her to him, so yeah. Anyway, I always am shocked by how much people keep to themselves in books when they're, like, going through something or, like, think they're gonna die and don't tell anybody. It's surprising to me. So, we're gonna finish the book. As we were talking about earlier, we're probably gonna finish it tonight or tomorrow, because we're so excited. Mm-hmm. Or at least in the next couple days. Do you think that we're going to come to a close in next week's reading? Or are we gonna be left on the cliffhanger?
I think we are not gonna get a lot of the answers we want, and there will be a small cliffhanger. I don't think it's gonna be something where it's gonna be like, well, I mean, let me backtrack. Based on the type of experience we are having with this book, we might put down this book and be like, I need the next one right now. But I think it's going to be more so because we've come up with all these theories that we want answers to.
Yeah.
Like, and less of this large cliffhanger.
We're reading it differently than normal people, or like we even would read a different book. Like, I think had we picked up this book and read it on our own, not trying to like dissect it to talk about it, we might be having a different experience with it.
Right. Imagine all the things that like you and I would have missed separately, because we've discussed this in the past. Like, I pick up on different details than you do. Which is
and
why
timing like, and stuff like that. Like, one example was the wolf. We found out that he was Simon, but until we started talking on the first week's reading, we hadn't yet put it together that Simon was Simon from the beginning.
Right.
And so how long would it have taken us to put those two together? That's just one example, but there's a million and five. Had you not sent me the description of the Emperor and then me read Corian's, I don't know if I would have put it together either, because we paused between the week's readings. Like, there were a few days in between it. So I might not have put it together that was the exact same description I had just read for the Emperor, because my brain doesn't hold on to descriptions that well.
I'm so curious to know if what normal readers who are just picking this book up and reading it for enjoyment and maybe aren't having book talk discussions about it, but or book club discussions about it, what is a plot twist to them that we are just like, oh, this confirms what we already know because we're discussing it. Like, I'm wondering,
I know, but
like,
we can't even ask other people who read it yet because they're too far in the series. Like,
I can't wait to go back and watch all the videos on Book Talk and just be like, oh my god, we knew before them, or like, what did we miss?
I hope someone's done like a read along, like as they're reading the pages, like update us. I hope someone's done that. But yeah, I think because this has been like my experience with most trilogies, I feel like we're gonna come to a semi-close this book. Some things are gonna get wrapped up pretty well, but enough's gonna be left hanging, because it seems like authors in the first book like want it to come to halfway of a close in case there's not another book, but leave it with enough room to make another book. So I think we're gonna come to a semi-close. This is her first like super popular book as far as I know, so I think that she's gonna write it to a somewhat close, but leave us just enough to need to read the other books. And I'm going to want to read them no matter what. So, yeah. Is there anything else you want to talk about this week, about this week's reading?
Oh, I think we covered it all this week.
I think we did too. We've talked so much outside of this week's recording that I feel like we got all our excitement like out. We've about talked this section to death now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess then I will end this episode, and all I need to tell you guys is to finish the book. Finish Furyborn, and we'll be back to talk about it next week. I hope you guys are enjoying as much as we are. that's it for today's episode of Judge a Book. If you enjoyed, please make sure to give us a 5-star review before you go. Connect with me on social media. They're all linked in the pod description. And don't forget, next Monday, a new episode of Book Club will be released, and we can once again judge a book.